Good morning. I'm so glad that we have this opportunity this morning to come together to fellowship in the house of the Lord, which is the body, the church, which is, as Paul told young Timothy, a pillar and a buttress of the truth. We are that. We are that which holds up and supports and showcases truth for all of the world. It need not be a place where you come in and find ambiguity. It should not be a place where you come in and find there is a lack of clarity. There should be truth esteemed clearly in the name of Jesus Christ for the salvation of all, not fearing or worrying about the offense which may be taken. No person will come into Christ without having not prior been offended by Him. He comes to us with a word, and that word is a double-edged sword that pierces to the division of soul and spirit, of joint and of marrow. So sharp is it that it is able to determine the difference between our thoughts on one hand and the intentions that we have on the other hand. That's a very sharp sword. And it is only by the grace of God that it would penetrate us. God does not first use His sword to kill us. He first uses His sword to cut away that which would eternally destroy us. And so we're so thankful to God for His Word. If you're visiting with us this morning, we're glad that you're here. Typically, in my approach to things, I come to a book of the Bible and we look at it in its entirety, exegetically, expositorily, coming into it to say, what does God say for us through this Word? And that word is Daniel. Now, as you can see, Daniel number 4, this is our fourth lesson in Daniel. So if you're visiting, we're just getting started. All of the former lessons are online, kind of building the base for that. You can find that on our YouTube channel, on our church webpage. But Daniel is such a rich book. I was, a month and a half ago, I was in the coffee shop and praying to God for clarity and for wisdom about what I should bring. And I do not plan my sermons any length of time ahead at all. I have no idea how many sermons we will have in Daniel. I don't plan out a year in advance or multiple years in advance. I don't, not even a month in advance. I take it as it comes and pray over it and speak to what I believe needs to be said at that moment. It's a very prayerful process. And praying to God for some wisdom and some direction as to where we should go. What is it that we need? What is it that I need? I was led to the book of Daniel, and I did not imagine how timely and needed that these truths would be. My prayer was simply that God would allow me to bring what Oldham Lane needs right now. And not what Oldham Lane needs, but what I need right now. And I have been deeply challenged by this book, and I hope that you will be too. I believe that life comes through the speaking of the Word and the reception of the Word, the hearing of it, and that it will grow up into a well of life within us if we will hear it. So, I'd like to begin this morning by reading from Daniel chapter 2, verses 1 through 23. You can join me in your Bibles. I will be reading out of the English Standard Version. But I'm going to begin this morning by reading this. And you may, if you wish not to follow along, you may just simply listen. But hear these words. These are the words from God. And I will echo my brother Sam, who said that reading is not a passive thing. It is an active thing. We may be passive in it, but we should not be. Actively listen. Hear these words from God, which are recorded for you and for your eternal soul. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dream. So they came in and stood before the king, and the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. They answered a second time and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. Because of this, the king was angry and very furious, and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who'd gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. There are so many relevant things that could be said there. This morning, we're not looking at the particulars of the dream. We're looking at what the setup and the lead up was to the dream and the interpretation. We'll be saying many things next week of what the dream entailed and what it means for even you and me, not just for Nebuchadnezzar. But for now, we're simply looking at this exchange between the king and those from whom he sought counsel. The reaction of the king in his lack of understanding and those from whom he sought counsel. Now I have 4 points that I wish to make this morning from this text. Let me just tell you what they are. The first one is the trouble of darkness. The second one is the fury of being in ignorance. The third one is the life and death nature of truth. It is no trite, trivial, lighthearted thing that we can throw together, slop together something, say a few words, and then go on our merry way. It is life and death. And then number four, the sole source of wisdom. These things will come from the text that we just read. The first one, the trouble of darkness. You see this here in verse 1. It's also repeated in verse 4. It says, in the second year of the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Have you ever had a dream of this sort? Maybe not one like this, but one that when you awoke from the dream, you couldn't go back to sleep. Heart beating, chest pounding. Let me just check and make sure the doors are locked. Make sure my wife is still next to me. Have you ever had one of those kinds of dreams? Well, Nebuchadnezzar had one that put him into a kind of existential crisis. Could not sleep. And the reason why he could not sleep was because he was in the dark about something. Now, not only was he in the dark because it was nighttime, but while he was laying there in the dark, he was in the dark about something in his own mind. The juxtaposing of this with what had happened in chapter 1, where the king went to Judah with great confidence, gathered up these people, brought them back to his kingdom, and said, come, learn to be like us. Go through my school, learn my language, eat my diet, do my education. I'll make you the most knowledgeable people in all the world. I know best. You're going to do as I say for you to do. And now the king is troubled because he could not make sense of what was in his own mind. And given the nature of what it was that he saw, he knew that it was significant enough to seek counsel from everyone, the wisest and the best that the land of Babylon had to offer. And he knew that it not only concerned him, but it concerned the rest of the world. And yet he was ignorant about it. It is troubling to be in the darkness. Now, it's not troubling to be in the darkness when you're asleep. Those that are asleep would prefer it. Turn on the light on a sleeping person. They will not like you. It's no trouble for a person who's asleep to be in the dark. But what of a person who is conscious? What of a person who's awake? What of a person who has some degree of their faculties about them and they know something is off, but they cannot turn on the light? There's no light to be turned on and they're in the dark. That is a troubling thing. It's one thing to be ignorant and to be so dumb that you don't know that you're ignorant, but it's another thing to be ignorant and to realize it. And it's amplified when you know that you're ignorant, but you also know you're supposed to have an answer. The king is to be leading. He's to be ruling. He is the one who is determining what is to be done in his kingdom, and at that point, where his kingdom would go and what else would be done about it. Whatever Nebuchadnezzar saw, it troubled him, and what he saw was from God. And God did not give him the answer. He only troubled him. Thus, God troubled him. This perhaps is the first time in the life of Nebuchadnezzar, who was likely a young man at this point, where he did not know something that he ought to know. Later on in Daniel, there'll be a phrase that we even use today, to be weighed and found wanting. You go to the market, give me 100 grams of cumin. You weigh it out, there's only 50 grams. It's weighed and found wanting. Nebuchadnezzar was weighed and found wanting. Later on, Belshazzar will be weighed and found wanting. These men who claim to have everything, claim to know it all, they do not. And so it is troubling. And God troubled him. And I would even say that this is a grace of God. It is a grace of God, and you may not think it, to be in the dark this morning and to be troubled about it. There is much more hope for you than a person who is in the dark and they're not troubled about it. A person who's in the dark and they're sleeping through it. If this morning you are in the dark, that is, ignorant to something, seeking for wisdom in some respect, looking for the wise counsel of God on some matter, but you truly do not know, you're in the dark about it. The fact that you know and that you're troubled about it is actually a good thing. And that is the grace of God. This was God's grace for Nebuchadnezzar to trouble him and let him not even sleep. The question is, what will illuminate him? Number two, the fury of darkness. In the trouble of his ignorance, he couldn't sleep, and so the king commanded, "It's nighttime. Go get the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans." That's what he's saying. Let them be summoned to tell the king his dreams. This is what you do when you're in the dark and you know it. When you're in the dark and you know it, what do you search for? You search for a flashlight. You reach for a lamp. You walk through the dark and try to find the light switch to turn it on. When you're ignorant about something, what do we do? When we're ignorant about something, we simply go to Google and we type it in. Or we go to our favorite AI assistant and say, "Give me the answers." Or perhaps you know somebody that's an expert on some issue or some matter and you go to them. I'm in need of something beyond what I currently can grasp and what I know, so I'm going to go to those who have the best answers. So the king brings in the best and the wisest of the intellectual class in the Babylonian Empire. But what do we know of them? They couldn't answer. He sought the answer to his troubling question, and there was no answer from the best and the brightest and the wisest and the experts and all of those people. He went to the source where you're supposed to find the answers, and none of them were there. Now remember, and this is important that we remember this, Babylon, take the last syllable off of Babylon. What do you get? Babel, right? We've pointed this out. This is actually the spot where all of those people way earlier on in creation had gone together to build a tower to heaven to replace God. They did not seek God's counsel in it. They wished to ascend to heaven by their own means, their own merit, their own prowess, and their own building project. And what did God do for them? He confused them and scattered them. What should you expect in terms of an answer, especially one that comes from heaven, in the location where the people by their own means could not reach heaven? What should we expect that they will have in terms of answers? They won't have any answers. We should expect ignorance, and of course that is what is there. So the wise men, the best and the brightest, they said, "There's not a man." And I guess before I read this, one thing that strikes me is the king is discerning enough to know this. The king knows that my dream came from heaven, and thus the interpretation of the dream should come from heaven. And therefore, if someone can give me the interpretation which they got from heaven, they should also be able to give me the meaning or the contents of the dream. If heaven can supply the interpretation, because the dream came from heaven, then shouldn't heaven also be able to supply the contents? It makes sense. The king knows if you don't give me the contents, I'll know that you're lying about the meaning. It's easy for anybody. You can take, but the thing that I just marvel at, you can take data about anything and you can spin it in a certain way and present it in a certain way. People do it all the time. Statisticians. You read what the charts are saying, what the numbers are saying, what the polls are saying, and how often does it actually hold true? You can make it, you can spin it how you want, you can say what you want. The king knows this, and so he says, "No, you're going to tell me the actual contents of the dream." And they said, "There's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand." They said down here, The thing that you ask is difficult. No one, notice this, no one can show it except what? Except the gods. Now that tells you the king is seeking his advice from these people. Just put this together in our time today. The king is seeking advice from the people who themselves don't even believe in the true and living God. Where are they getting their counsel? The expert always became an expert by someone. What was their source? Well, their source was idolatry. The king is going to them to find the answers. And they said, well, we can't do it. The answers are only found with the gods. And certainly, they have nothing to do with us because they don't know the nature of the true and living God who wishes to know his people and who wishes not to leave us in the dark but to give us good and wise counsel. And so the king, here's what he does. This is the fury of ignorance. He's ignorant, seeks answers from those who should know. He realizes they're lying. He's in the dark, and he's being lied to about it. And so the response is, because of this, the king was angry and was very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So, that should say the. So the decree went out and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. This is the fury of an ignorant person who knows that they're ignorant and there is no answer to be found. R.J. Rush Dooney said his waking response had been a hatred of the impotence of the religious and scientific practitioners of his day, and a desire to expose their futility. Having known the terrors of the unseen, and knowing vividly how man in his proudest knowledge only skated on the thin ice of the seen, his urge was to mass destruction. So the king was moved to fury in his ignorance because there was no answer in the dark. Imagine, it has to be real for us. Imagine waking up and realizing that the best and the brightest in the United States, the experts, the ruling class, the ones with the doctorates, the ones writing the papers, the ones issuing the books, imagine waking up and realizing, oh, they actually don't know. Imagine waking up and realizing they're not telling me the truth. Some of them, of course, it is as a wolf in sheep's clothing. Some of them is as a fool who listens to the wolf. Some people in the world are wolves and they wish to destroy. Some people are fools who listen to the voice of the wolves and they go and they perpetuate it. And they have a degree that is printed on the paper that the wolf gave them. Imagine waking up and realizing that the best of our intellectuals are captured, manipulating answers depending on where the money is, where the funding is, who's in power, what the populace is currently saying. It's amazing how you can make the data say something different depending on what the pressures of the broader world is currently saying. I do know it was not that many decades ago that Al Gore said the earth has a fever. Look at the back and forth on the climate stuff. It's not firm. It's not. There's no continuity there. The earth is overpopulated, said Bill Gates. This is an ideology. That's not a fact. You came from a monkey, said Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin's image is printed on money over in Europe. Here's our money. Here's this guy. He's one of our, Charles Darwin, you came from a monkey. Sigmund Freud, your whole identity can be explained sexually. Or just 6 years ago, stand 6 feet apart. Why? Because we said so. Where do you get that from? We don't know. Put this thing over your face. Will it help? We say that it will. They knew, in fact, that it didn't. The food scientists. Growing up in the 90s was a wild time. I just remember the when people were just starting to realize, oh, what we're eating is not good, we need to, and so everybody, it was a free-for-all to, who can get there first to say, here's what you should do. So the Atkins diet. Don't eat any fat, but you can certainly eat those circus peanuts because they're only sugar and foam. Don't eat butter, eat margarine. Why? Don't eat red meat. Don't eat egg yolks, only eat the white. Don't drink milk. Don't eat salt. I just want to do, and I'm making a point here. I'm making a point to say that it is very easy, the fallacy of the expert, to just say, but this person says so. But why? Do we question? Do we look at the stuff that's being given? Sometimes I wonder if the system is built to create those that look on things with some degree of scrutiny. I'm reading the Bible. I believe this is the revealed word of the living God. Everything that it says that can be measured, we're finding over and over again that it's true. There's excavations all over the promised land, all over the ancient world to show it's telling the truth. It's facts, it's figures, it's dates, it's characters, it's people, everything that can be measured. But I read this book, and God says one of his favorite foods is the fattened calf. Not just cows, not just red meat, but the fat one. Give me the fat one. And do you know what happened with it when it was cooked on that barbecue in the tabernacle? It was eaten by guess who? The Levites. And God said, this is your portion. You don't, just think about this, you don't get land, but you get brisket. That's a pretty good trade if you've had good brisket. And God said, you know what? It needs to always be well seasoned with salt. Why is these? Does God care about the taste of salt? No, he does not. The salt means something, but guess who's going to be consuming that sacrifice once it's done? The Levite will be. And God said, I'm giving you a land flowing with milk and honey. That was the blessings and the bounty of God. And Job asked a question. Is there any flavor in the white of an egg? And I can tell you there's not. There was a period where I did that, just egg whites only. It's not good. I want the yolk. God made it. Just imagine, though, imagine the arrogance. The Bible speaks a bunch about eggs and eating eggs. And Jesus said, you're the salt of the earth. I'm the bread that comes down from heaven. God has revealed certain things, and we just skirt by them. But I'll tell you, it is infuriating when you realize that those in charge have either been captured or they're actively lying. Now, the truth, not just in respect to things, all of that I just said is just an illustration. It's just to show that you can have the expert credential and maybe not be presenting the best information. The truth is a matter of life and death. That's what Daniel chapter 2 shows. It is a matter of life and death. The king said he was going to kill all of the leading class of people because they could not give an answer. Death was going to come because of what? Because of the lies. In the Bible, death always follows lies. And life always follows the truth. And the truth may force you to die to yourself. But you can then be revived and live again, and you can live for eternity. The truth always brings life. Lies always bring death. Of course, this is what Satan did from the beginning, and we all know this very well, but it's good to be reminded of this. The Nebuchadnezzar, we could say, indeed, his reaction was wrong, and it was, but we should note that those who are in darkness and they're awake to it and therefore troubled, and they've gone on their excavation and their search for knowledge and have not found it. And wherever they've gone, they found that doesn't hold up, that doesn't hold up, this isn't true, that's inconsistent. And then they realize, I'm being lied to perpetually. Those in darkness who are aware, who then search for answers and cannot find it, are the most likely to go unhinged. It's not lost on me. Church, why do we stand as a beacon of light? Because we love people who are in the darkness. That's what it is. It's not lost on me that many of the recent mass shootings in this country have been done by persons who claim transgender identities. That's not lost on me that the lies lead to death and destruction. They were sold a lie, oftentimes in the name of compassion. And I know for certain that compassion is often a mask for cowardice and even for egotism. It's not lost on me that when Hitler and Stalin and Mao bought the lie of Darwin, namely that some races are more advanced than others. By the way, that's what Darwin taught. We still teach Darwin. Some races are more advanced than others. That's what Darwin taught. Now, is he telling the truth? No, he was lying. He didn't even know. But it's not lost on me that when all of those big 20th century world leaders bought that lie, that there are advanced races of people, they proceeded to kill literally millions. It's not lost on me that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, which still has offices all over the country and is well-funded, it's not lost on me that Margaret Sanger bought the lie of eugenics, and she was trying, through abortion, the initial purposes of Planned Parenthood was to literally stop certain races of people, which there is only one race, but that's not how they would teach it, to stop certain demographics and certain classes of people from having babies. That's Margaret Sanger. It's not lost on me that 70 million babies died and were murdered since that lie was perpetuated. It isn't lost on me that those who have bought the liberal ideal, which is personal autonomy as a primary good, are also advocating in Canada for medically assisted suicide. And it's working its way into our country. Church, the truth is a matter of life and death. If we love life, if we love God, if we love Jesus, if we love the world, if we want to save the world, send forth the truth with no worry about what happens after that. And I'm mindful of this one fact that in Daniel chapter 2, when the truth was heralded, it was the one thing that led to the saving of many lives. But in Daniel chapter 3, those who spoke up and told the truth were the ones thrown in to the fire. And Satan would like for us to say, but sometimes when you tell the truth, you'll die for it. Yes, you may, but you'll live forever. If you don't tell the truth, you will not live at all. There will be no life for anyone if we don't tell the truth. And yet the Bible shows this, that when you go through the fire, and we sang it a minute ago, God will be with you as gold that is refined. The truth is a matter of life and death. So where do we go for it? Where shall we find it? Many did not like the truth that Jesus told, though it was indeed the truth. And when they left him after Jesus said what was true, Jesus said to his closest disciples, "Will you leave me too?" And what did they say to him? They said, "To whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Let me ask you, what does it matter if the Word of God cuts you to your core? What does that matter? So how many will hear a word that confronts them, that calls them out, that speaks to the truth of the matter? How many will hear it and then turn from it and say, "Let me go somewhere else. Let me find someone else. Let me find a place that speaks only or affirms only what I already think to be the case." The truth is a matter of life and death, but where will we go for it? I'm mindful of this. Daniel and his peers in the face of death, they did not what Nebuchadnezzar did. Nebuchadnezzar said, "I have a question. Bring me the advisors. Bring me the experts." What did Daniel do? What did Daniel do? Daniel and his peers, they went straight to God and they prayed to God. Are we beyond that? I'm really asking. In the world in which we live right now, are we beyond that? Is that an ancient superstition? For those who didn't understand that you have to actually do these certain things, why would we go first to God? That's the message on repeat through the Bible. Go first to God. Who gives wisdom? Anybody can read a graph. Anybody can read a chart. It takes wisdom to look at it and make sense of it and have a course of action that follows it that has continuity with the words which God gives. Do we shrug at the power of prayer and the promise of wisdom therein? Where do we seek the answers? Well, the answers are found in only one place, and it is at the throne of the living God. So learn the world as Daniel did and become educated as Daniel was. Read extensively, that's good. We should be as educated as we can be. But pray to God all the while for wisdom to see through. What of this is true? What of this is false? How can I chew on the meat and spit out the bones? So Daniel finishes with this. It says, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And Daniel answered and said, and let me read this, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. In chapter 1, Daniel's might came from the Almighty God, though he was eating only vegetables. He was not getting the fat portions. He was not getting the meat. He was eating only vegetables and was stronger. That was the miracle, because where does our might come from? It comes from God. Do we believe it comes from God? That's where it comes from. Trust in that. And wisdom from Him. He, that is God, changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. Listen to this. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness. God knows what is in the darkness. This morning, if you're in the darkness, God knows that answer you're searching for. God knows it. The way out, God knows it. That way that seems inescapable, that box you're in that seems you can never come through it, there is a way out of it. And it is by God who knows what's in the dark. With Him there is only light. He's not blind to anything. Nothing is hidden from His sight. He knows everything, yesterday, today, tomorrow. Every atom in the world is being upheld by the power of Jesus. Every action of man is under the view of God. He knows what's in the darkness, and the light dwells with Him. And so Daniel says, to you, O God of my fathers, and I join him in saying this, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. God is awesome. God is light. God is truth. In this life, you will be troubled at times. And sometimes you will be troubled purposefully by God, who has a plan. Maybe this morning you're in the dark. There is not only hope in the way that we use it, but assurance, firm confidence. God knows you and loves you and sees you and wishes for you to have life. Where are you going for your answers? Who are you seeking? Go to God. Fall on your knees at His throne. Pour out your soul to Him. Humble yourself before Him. Beseech Him as the God of all mercies, the God of all wisdom, the God of all might. You are weak this morning. So was every person who in Jesus Christ is now made strong. You are ignorant this morning. So is every person who at one time did not believe in Jesus Christ. There is wisdom and might for any who would come to the throne of God. We have the truth. We will not shy from that. It is the one hope for all the world. Bring Christ your broken life. If you have any need at all, you can let it be known while we stand and while we sing.